May it please the court. Respondent Roger Dade was licensed to practice law in Missouri in 2003. He practices in Kansas City. He also has a license to practice in Kansas federal court, but is not a member of the Kansas bar. In 2009 and 2010, he was employed as corporate counsel for Sunshine Energy, a Florida company that had office and presence in Kansas. In 2009 or so, Sunshine, his employer, bought several Kansas gas stations out of a bankruptcy proceeding, but they didn't buy all of the assets because some of the personal property, gas pumps and car wash, et cetera, were owned by a third company, M&I. At one of the stations, M&I interest exceeded $300,000. By January of 2010, Sunshine and M&I had been negotiating for several months with the idea that Sunshine would purchase the personal fee. Sunshine never disputed that M&I owned the gas pumps and other property, personal property, but they were sort of slow in getting to the negotiating table. And then when negotiations stalled in January of 2010, M&I brought a replevin action in Johnson County, Kansas District Court, State Court. A few days after being served, his company being served, respondent appeared in court announcing himself as the attorney for Sunshine. He initially asked for more time to respond, but did not report that he wasn't licensed to practice in Kansas State Courts.
And he did not request additional time to hire counsel?
He did not. But he did ask for more time. I mean, I think his first thing he said was, let's have more time, but he didn't give a reason. I'm not licensed in Kansas, so I need more time. Instead, he actually argued a little bit of the facts in the case, not the facts, I'm sorry, conceded the facts that the ownership was on the part, the M&I owned everything, but asked for more time, mentioned that he was hoping to continue negotiations. And asked the court not to rule right away. Instead, the court did go ahead and order the replevin, but 10 days hence. In other words, giving 10 more days for the parties to negotiate and before the order would become final and effective. That didn't happen. Those negotiations still failed, so the order was set to become effective, and he still did not retain local counsel, Kansas counsel, during that time period. Instead, once it became effective.
And you made the point in your submission that there was a short time period between getting notice of the replevin and when he had to appear in court, but there was an additional 10-day period, you're saying, where there was no attempt to hire counsel.
Yeah, the short time period, the initial short time, yes, I'm sorry, that's where you're headed. There was 4 or 5 days between the time of the notice and the first hearing from very late February until March the 4th. Then you're right, there was another 10-day period before it was going to be final, and still no local counsel was brought in at that time.
And then counsel, with respect to local counsel, did the respondent have any prior dealings with the local counsel that had previously been used for Sunshine?
I don't know that there was any. It's not part of the record, and I don't know anything about whether they had used local counsel for any steps.
I believe they had previously used local counsel for those operations. And the question is, did the respondent know that local counsel?
I don't know that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So the order became effective, and no local counsel was contacted. And instead of doing that, the respondent actually prepared a notice of appeal and put on the signature line his sister's name. His sister is licensed in Kansas. She's not wasn't affiliated with Sunshine Energy, and he hadn't asked her if he could do that. So he prepared a notice of appeal. His sister. His name, who is a Kansas attorney, was listed. Her bar number was listed. Sunshine's address was listed, and he signed that without having her permission. Within days, the judge and the clerk in the case began checking around for both the respondent and his sister. The clerk actually telephoned the respondent, and he provided his federal court ID number as if that was his Kansas bar number, which he did not have one of those. So the judge and the clerk eventually figured out what was going on. The respondent did not perfect the appeal. He did bring in local counsel eventually, and Sunshine and M&I soon settled the case. Opposing counsel, M&I counsel, reported that no harm occurred and no one took action on reliance of the notice of appeal that the respondent had filed. So he stipulated that conduct violated the rules of professional conduct in two ways. One, Rule 4-5.5, the unauthorized practice of law in Kansas, because he wasn't licensed there and he appeared there. And two, Rule 4-8.4D, conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice by providing the clerk with his federal court ID number as if that were his Kansas bar number, and then, of course, by signing his sister's name and bar number on the notice of appeal when he didn't have authority to do that.
Why has the informant stipulated that the conduct was more appropriately characterized as being prejudicial to the administration of justice rather than dishonest conduct?
I think it really comes down to the idea that there's no a lack of significant harm.
Well, what does that have to do with whether or not he was dishonest?
It's hard for me to look at it and not talk about knowing misstatements, knowing dishonesty when I look at the facts. But that is the characterization, that's the charge that is stipulated. And I think those are the standards that we look at.
The charge was not that he acted dishonestly. The charge was that he acted in a way prejudicial. So
yes.
Was he charged with
both? I'm sorry. Let me correct that because I don't want to misstate it at all. Actually, the information includes a charge of 8.4C, which could include does include misrepresentation or dishonesty. The stipulation just refers to 8.4D, conduct prejudicial.
And are we bound by that stipulation?
No.
Because
the court is not.
Wouldn't you?
I mean, the language of the first paragraph of the stipulation, you read them before, includes language that the court is not bound by those findings.
Yeah, and would you agree that he knew that it was a false statement being submitted to the court?
I think it's, I have a lot of trouble arguing that it's not knowing conduct.
Okay, but
I'm not going to argue that.
Okay, under ABA Standard 6.12, when a lawyer knows that false statements or documents are being submitted to the court,
right. Suspension
is appropriate.
It is. The 6.12 talks about knowing misrepresentations without remedial action and with harm to the process or parties. Compare that to 6.13 talks about negligent misstatements or negligence in failing to take remedial action, such as if a client a witness or a client misrepresents something and the lawyer doesn't take remedial action, and talks about harm. So it sort of fits in between those. And then we get to the mitigating factors.
Well, but if I understand it, whether or not we agree with you that it was not knowing or not intentional, it's the informant's position that if there was no harm and if a correction was made, that it's more appropriately considered for a reprimand than suspension?
That is the way we presented it.
And that's what you understand the ABA standards to say? Or this
yes. Kind
of falls in the middle.
I think
of those
it does
two.
Fall in the middle. I think it is between 6.12 and 6.13. There is some problem if you don't have harm and it's knowing, it's not particularly covered. So I'd be happy to make an argument. I mean, I'd be comfortable making an argument with either one, with that 6.12 would control or 6.13 would control. But there are several mitigating circumstances that we think should be considered, and we considered in making that stipulation.
However, counsel.
What about the aggravating factor?
There's at least one significant aggravating factor, and that's the respondent's prior admonition. I mean, he just has one, but it was for unauthorized practice in Kansas. It was not for blatant dishonesty. He was working for a Kansas firm and he didn't have a Kansas license.
However, counsel, before we arrive at that conclusion, don't we first have to make a determination as to whether or not the action was negligent or was it deceptive? There's a bifurcated process. So if we go down the negligent road, then we can bring in all those additional factors and mitigating, et cetera. But if we look at deception, then we're talking about another mode of discipline. However, your stipulation was that it was negligent, is my understanding, right?
That is a stipulation, yes.
Okay. And we're not bound by that stipulation, I understand.
Right.
Okay. So before we get to the other discussions, don't we first have to make a determination of whether it was negligent or whether it was deceptive?
I'm not sure because I think, we have to look at what other standards there are in determining what the appropriate sanction is. And the ABA standards are one, and perhaps a really good standard to use. I'm just saying in this particular case, I don't think they're that clear that it has to be that 6.12 would be controlling. They're not controlling in any event because the court can do what it wants to, but that would control if they were sentencing guidelines, if they were in the nature of those. I think the significant mitigating circumstances include his respondent's admission, his cooperative attitude throughout the proceedings, the informant's counsel at the earlier level.
What evidence is there in the record that he would have ever brought it to the disciplinary authorities' attention had he not been caught?
I don't think there is that in the record. I don't know of that in the record. He has already attended the ethics school. It's almost, in some ways, it's like a reprimand with requirements under that rule, but he did it in advance, and so that has happened, and so I think it can be considered a mitigating circumstance. The case did settle soon. Kansas attorney was brought in. The appeal wasn't perfected, and no one apparently relied on on the notice of appeal, and consequently, we don't really see an adverse impact as a result, and that's how we came up with this recommendation.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 3 minutes on rebuttal. Mr. Dade.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Unlike those that had the honor of appearing before this court earlier to advocate on behalf of their clients, I'm here to ask that you reprimand me, sanction me. I appreciate the court giving me this opportunity to appear before you. I appreciate the disciplinary committee's willingness to discuss these issues with me, the willingness of the disciplinary counsel, their office, to work with me and discuss these issues with me, and Kevin Odrosky, the counsel for the OCDC as well. This has not been a pleasant experience by any stretch of the imagination. I hope to give some human aspect to the sincerity of the gravity of the issue that I fully understand. Your Honors are asking questions that are exactly on point. The timing difference between the date that my client was served and when I appeared is virtually irrelevant, does not have any bearing on my misconduct. Were there previous lawyers involved? That I don't know, Your Honor, but again, it does not excuse my misconduct. So to me, that's immaterial. I have stipulated to all the facts in this case, Your Honor asked, whether or not I would have done something differently if I hadn't been caught. It's difficult for me to speculate at this point what I would have done differently. I obviously would have done a lot of things differently had I not used poor judgment to begin with. I don't know that that answers your question, but I don't know that I'd like to speculate on what I would have done differently other than to say I should have done things a lot differently.
Well, there was something in the record that you signed your sister's name. You surely weren't going to appear as your sister. So
I was not.
You thought you were getting her involved? Or
yes.
Can I ask one further question that may be in everyone's mind? What were you thinking?
Well, obviously not clearly and obviously not in a way that I should have been thinking as to my responsibilities to the court. quite frankly, I was thinking as to what the best results were for my client, which, not that it's relevant, but the results were actually quite favorable for my client, and my client wasn't damaged or aggravated in any way by my conduct. That doesn't excuse my conduct. So my direct answer to you is I wasn't thinking along the lines of what I should be doing personally with regards to my responsibility to the court, but instead was thinking more as to what the issues were for my client, and I didn't address them both.
Why don't we have to worry you may do that again?
Well, that's why I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. The aggravating previous circumstance, clearly, you know, I don't know how to express to this court with any greater degree of understanding how serious this is to me and how much I understand the significance of my misconduct. So I can only tell you that I've learned my lesson, so to speak. But clearly, you know, my credibility in that department has been damaged. And I can't do anything to repair that other than to show you or demonstrate to you that I understand.
Mr. Day?
Yes?
You were licensed to practice law in the state of Missouri, I believe, on this very day 10 years ago, 9/11/2003, if you recall. So you've been in practice for 10 years now. I have a question. When you were first approached Judge Hauber there, you were not licensed in the state of Kansas, but you had an exigent circumstance where you had to go in. Why did you not ask Judge Hauber if you could have time to get local counsel and if he could continue the matter so that you could get a licensed attorney in Kansas to handle that matter? Why did you not trust the judge to use his or her discretion in response to you as a member of the bar in the state of Missouri?
Well, clearly, Your Honor, I should have. My only answer to you is I didn't. It gets back to another question of what was I thinking?
Right.
You know, did I ask specifically for additional time to get a Kansas attorney? I should have.
Well,
the fact is, I didn't.
We know that you didn't, but I want to follow up with the judge's question. This is something that would have been available to you as an attorney. Why were you not forthright with the judge who was handling the case to explain your circumstances?
And again, I'm not trying to evade your question other than to say I don't really have a good answer for your question other than to say I didn't do that and I should have, and I clearly was not thinking along the lines that I needed to be thinking and was instead concerned about other issues and didn't address that issue, and that's my error and that's my misconduct. So I'd love to give you a better answer, but I don't have one.
Well, it sounds like you didn't take seriously the requirement that you be a licensed member of the Kansas Bar or have one with you, and you're saying now you understand how serious that is.
The latter part of your question, absolutely. This process has been humbling on many levels, embarrassing. I had to address this with my own sister, whom my personal credibility was impacted with my own sister on this matter. That also was not a fun experience. But all of these things cumulatively, I absolutely do understand. I fail to have the words, I think, to accurately tell you how much I get it.
So if this court, according to a foreman, has suggested that your conduct falls kind of in the middle between what the ABA says is appropriate conduct for a reprimand and what it says is appropriate conduct for a suspension. And so mitigating and aggravating factors then play into their recommendation. Tell us why you believe we should, if we do agree you're in the middle, we should go for the lower sanction rather than the higher one.
Well, I think my actions at the time, while wrong on my behalf and my own responsibilities to the court, I was wrong, and I accept that. My client wasn't damaged by my misconduct. So in that sense, I think that that's mitigating. Additionally, per your honors, when I was caught, I haven't tried to at any time evade, diminish, dismiss, argue, or otherwise not admit everything. I have done everything that the OCDC has asked me to do.
Well, they didn't ask you to admit that it was dishonest, so you didn't have to stipulate to that. If they had asked you, will you stipulate that your activity was dishonest, what would you do?
I would stipulate to that, Your Honor. It's impossible for me to stand here and argue that what I did wasn't dishonest. The facts are the facts, and I'm not going to try to suggest otherwise. So, you know, in that vein, I discussed these issues with Mr. Odrowski, and this is what we came to in terms of an agreement. To follow up in terms of the other mitigating factors, you know, appearing here before this court, Your Honors, it's humbling. And so to answer the question why I'm asking you to find that reprimand is appropriate as opposed to suspension is for those reasons, that I've truly learned my lesson. I understand the gravity of the situation. I believe that I've addressed it in the most, you know, forthright, straightforward way that I can or could. I've acknowledged, you know, with complete remorse, regret, great sincerity as to understanding the nature of the issue, but I certainly understand that this court is not bound by that stipulation. I've understood that at all points, but that's, like I said earlier, that's why I wanted to appear or was thankful to have the opportunity to appear before this court and give voice to the issues to come off the paper.
Can you tell me, what's changed since 2005? You had an admonition, I believe, in 2005. And then in 2010, we are there again, but maybe a little more serious than in 2010. What has changed you in 2010 now to say that you should be entitled to, or you should receive, I should say, a reprimand versus a suspension?
Well, is Your Honor asking me what's changed in terms of my understanding of the gravity of the situation?
Yes.
Well, clearly I didn't take it as seriously in 2005 as I should have. To be quite frank and honest, the opportunity that was presented to me with employment with Sunshine was a very good, in my judgment or opinion, career opportunity for me. I let some of those things evade my thoughts as to thinking clearly about other responsibilities that I clearly have. And so I think what Your Honor maybe is asking me is, what has changed now today different from 05 and 010? This process alone is, like I said earlier, humbling. So that's my answer to your question.
Thank you. If there are no further questions.
I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Phillips.
Thank you. I wanted to give the court a little more guidance. Nothing here is controlling, but so I hope to send a letter through Mr. Thompson, through the clerk, with a couple of citations to Missouri cases and such about what the court has done, and another court in dishonesty cases, and sometimes ended up with reprimand. So I hope to be able to do that tomorrow. I'll talk a couple of them real quickly. Some of you remember the Couples case from Kansas City area, 1997, I think. Hiding files from his firm and also hiding files, secreting the files from his firm, and also not telling even the clients that he was handling the cases outside of the firm but on his own. The first couple's case ended up with a reprimand. It was a split decision, but it was a reprimand. a Wallingford case, 1990, and I will send the cites, two things. She signed her client's signature and then notarized it herself. It was with the client's permission. And then also filed a false certificate of service, and that one ended up as a reprimand. A Kentucky case from just last month, apparent grudge by the then bar president of Kentucky sent letters to lawyers on the Ethics Commission saying you've been removed, when in fact they had not been removed from that. And that court ended up reprimanding that lawyer named Bonner. And then the LIM case, L-I-M case from 2007, purposefully held clients' documents and immigration documents from the client to force payment of fees, and ended up as a reprimand in that case too. So I think those may be other issues that the court may want to consider. And I hope they're helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under submission.